Okay, so following what Bobby presented about process evaluation, so we've done our baseline assessment for those that participated in our intervention, and we assessed their knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs regarding clinical trials among rural service providers as well as PLWHA participants. So for this presentation, I'll go over the learning objectives, give a bit of background on the literature that's surrounding attitudes, knowledge, as well as normative beliefs, state our methods, and identify our results, and make some conclusions, and also indicate future implications of these findings in public health practice, and acknowledge those that made this work possible. So for our learning objectives for this presentation, they are to understand rural service provider and PLWHA perceptions and knowledge related to clinical trial research, and compare and contrast rural service provider and PLWHA responses to determine possible discrepancies in knowledge and perceptions related to clinical trial research. So from what we found in the literature, we see that literature surrounding knowledge and attitude of service providers relating to HIV clinical trial is limited, it's sparse, and from the limited research that's done on this population with respect to HIV clinical trial specifically, we see that service providers do see clinical trial participation as a positive treatment step. However, many of them still do not encourage their minority patients to participate in clinical trials based on beliefs that rural minorities might not be interested in clinical trials, PLWHA might not be willing to meet the clinical trial requirements, clinical trials have eligibility criteria that their patients might not meet, and lastly, referral might lead to more paperwork for them. With respect to knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs among PLWHA, again, here the literature is limited as well, but from what we have on ground so far, we see that there are generally negative attitudes and beliefs towards HIV/AIDS clinical trials, and one of the major contributing factors to this are distrust in government-controlled clinical trials with respect to privacy issues as well as how their rights are protected and the legacy of slavery and previous unethical studies, as we pointed out earlier. And another major influencing factor is fear of losing their rights by signing the informed consent form, as well as being treated with a placebo, meaning being left not to treat or being left without treatment. So some methods we use to get at knowledge, attitudes, and normative beliefs with these two samples are self-administered and surveys. And for these surveys, the service providers question totaled 66 items, 27 of which were related to knowledge, 8 of which were related to attitudes. For PLWHA questions, we had a total of 76 items, 7 of which were knowledge related, 3 attitude related, and 3 normative belief related. For the knowledge questions, we had a true or false response options for each question, and for attitudes, we had a 5-point Likert scale that ranged from strongly disagree to strongly agree. And for normative beliefs, we had 3 response options, which were definitely, probably, and not. So for our sample characteristics for service providers, we had a total of 5 service providers, 3 of which were between ages 30 and 39, 2 of which were between ages 40 and 49, 1 Black, 1 Hispanic, 3 whites, and majority of them being female. For PLWHA, we had a total of 28, 24 identifying as Black, 17 identifying as male, 10 identifying as yes, they had participated in a clinical trial before. And we see a wide range in terms of age, and also we see that most of them had lived with HIV/AIDS for a relatively long time. So based on these methods, we found the following, first starting with PLWHA knowledge about clinical trial research. So we had a total of 7 items, as I stated earlier, and all but these two highlighted questions had a correct response rate of over 70, meaning that participants answered the question correctly. The first question that they that oh, whoops, sorry. The first question that they they performed at less than 75% correct response rate on is the new treatment being tested in an HIV trial is always better than the treatment currently being used with other patients or clients. That relates to clinical equipoise, like Bobby mentioned earlier. And then the second question is, in a randomized HIV trial, the treatment you get is decided by something like a coin toss, which relates to randomization. For service provider knowledge, overall, they answered most of the questions correctly, just with the few that had less than 75% correct response rate here. And the first being patient and clients who enroll in randomized HIV trial who do not get the treatment they wanted can usually get the other treatment. So we see that only 60% answered this correctly. And this ties in again to randomization. The other question is, it is optional for participants in a clinical trial to follow all treatment guidelines. 40% answered this correctly. And lastly, providers should persuade their patients or clients to participate in clinical trials. Here, 40% answered this correctly, and this ties in again to their roles as service providers. So when looking at these two groups and how they performed with respect to knowledge about clinical trials, we see that both groups answered most of the questions correctly, with only a few exceptions. Some PLWHA did not know that patients are followed for side effects and have the right to withdraw at any time from a study. Some PLWHA also did not understand clinical equipoise. And not all service provider and PLWHA understood randomization and how that plays out in the area or the arena of clinical trial research. And lastly, service providers are not all aware of their role in not persuading their client or their patient to participate in clinical trials. So shifting gears to attitudes among PLWHA, these questions actually were statements came directly from the survey. So the pie charts will show the range of response that individuals gave. So first, it is important to talk to my case manager or healthcare provider about HIV trial participation. We see here that they all agree to varying degrees, with the majority strongly agree with the statement. The next, HIV trial opportunities are an important option for people with HIV. Here again, they all agree. HIV trials are important in finding better ways to treat HIV/AIDS. Here again, they all agree, with the majority strongly agreeing. And for attitudes among service providers, clinical trial opportunities are not an important option for people with HIV. We see here that they all strongly disagree with 80%. They all disagree with 80% strongly disagreeing. And here we see a wider range of responses, with 60% strongly disagreeing with the statement, "It is not really my role as a provider to suggest clinical trials as an option for my patient or client living with HIV/AIDS," and 20% strongly agreeing, and 20%, and another 20% somewhat disagreeing with the statement. It is important to involve underrepresented minorities in HIV trials. We see here that they all agree, with 40% somewhat agreeing and 60% a majority strongly agreeing with the statement. And it is important to encourage my patient or client to find out more about HIV trials. We see here that they all agree again, and 60% somewhat agreeing, 40% strongly agreeing. It is my role to assist my client or patient in making a decision to participate in HIV clinical trials. Here they all agree as well. Presenting the option of participation in an HIV trial to my patient or client may negatively impact our relationship. Here they all disagree. And in summarizing the trends and the data regarding or surrounding attitudes for both groups, we find that PLWHA do hold positive attitudes about clinical trial participation and about communicating with their service provider regarding this topic. Service providers understand their role in informing and supporting their their patients as they decide about clinical trial participation. All service providers do not believe presenting clinical trials would negatively affect their relationship with their patients, and both SP service providers and PLWHA believe that minority participation is important. Minority participation in clinical trials specifically is important. So the last construct is normative beliefs, and this is specific to PLWHA. The first statement is, my local provider thinks I should participate in an HIV trial. Majority of them stated definitely for this statement. The next is, other people living with HIV would think that I should participate in an HIV trial. 54% probably, 39% definitely, and 7% not. My family thinks I should participate in an HIV trial. Here, they say 50% state that their family would definitely think they should participate in an HIV trial, 36% probably, and 14% not. And lastly, my close friends think I should participate in an HIV trial. We see that 39% definitely, 38% probably, and 23% not. So based on all that, all the data we collected for normative belief, we see that clinical trial participation is an emerging norm among PLWHA, with this order showing the groups that would strongly be in support, or the degree to which these groups would support their participation in clinical trials, the first being service provider, the next being family members, and the third being other PLWHA, and lastly, their close friends. So in conclusion, the service providers in PLWHA in our sample showed high knowledge about clinical trials. PLWHA also had positive attitudes about HIV clinical trials. Service providers understood their role regarding clinical trial participation and think positively about actually carrying these roles out. And the norm order for PLWHA clinical trial participation goes thus: service provider, family members, PLWHA, and close friends. Some limitations to the data that we collected, this baseline assessment, is, as Bobby mentioned, our sampling. We had a convenient sampling, and also for our service providers, we had only 5 individuals, and for PLWHA, although we had 28, this is still a relatively small sample size. And also our sampling method, all our PLWHA, we actually linked to one particular service provider in our sample, so that link in itself lends itself to a trend in our normative beliefs data that might not be there for PLWHA that are not in care or that do not have service providers that were participating in the study. For constructability, we did use measures that are existing measures specifically for the knowledge aspect of our survey, but these measures have not been validated, and we had to develop also new measures which we've not validated as well. So we cannot ascertain the constructability of our survey questions. And lastly, the quantitative nature of our surveys really limits us in explaining what we observed, and also the differences in the questions we asked based on groups cannot allow us to do a direct comparison in terms of the trends that we observed. So why does this study matter in terms of public health practice? The implications for public health practice are numerous, one of which is it can help us in refining culturally appropriate interventions tailored to service provider and PLWHA populations. We can build on and focus on the gaps in knowledge that we identify relating to randomization, clinical equipoise, and strengthen service providers' ability to support their clients and patients neutrally, and also explain more about the expectations that come with clinical trial participation. And also the information can help us develop community-wide programs to address all the levels of the socio-ecological framework. So developing community-wide campaigns that get at attitudes and normative beliefs, and also developing group-based intervention based on the norm order that I presented earlier. So we can focus on family members, friends, providers, and all these other groups in supporting clinical trial participation among rural minorities. We'd like to acknowledge these individuals, particularly our community advisory board, for being, like Bobby stated, the engine behind this project and really making this possible, and all these other individuals for their contributions and their efforts in making Project East what it is today. And thank you all so much for attention. At this point, we'd like to entertain your questions. Yes.
On the attitudes and normative beliefs, did you do sort of a did you ask them questions before you went through this whole process and then see if that changed over time after going through the process?
These questions, or the data I presented, are strictly at baseline. So we have the data for the immediate post, and we'll be comparing that once the data has been cleaned and ready for analysis. So these are just strictly prior to the intervention.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
If I understood you correctly, you said that you asked some of the persons living with HIV and AIDS how they might create solutions to some of the problems. I wondered if they suggested anything to deal with the transportation issues.
I'll let Bobby take that.
The actual activity was called Break the Barrier. It was a brainstorm. We essentially split the activity into two parts. So the first part, we did have them generate a good amount of barriers, and they did come up with transportation. And some of the solutions they had for that, the AIDS Clinical Trials Unit at UNC is also actually putting clinical trials on a mobile unit. So some of them are aware of that, and they'll say the mobile unit is coming. Also, knowing what clinical trials have available, some clinical trials may have travel vouchers. So knowing to ask these specific questions. So with transportation, most of them know the mobile van or to ask about transportation vouchers. And we do make it clear when we do this exercise, we understand that these are very real issues. We know that it's very difficult to get a 3-hour ride where you don't even have public transport in your own community. So we just want to generate some solutions to these problems. But they're predominantly around the vouchers or the mobile unit coming from the ACTU. Don't all jump at once.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I realize that the sample size kind of limited your ability to do any statistical analysis, but I'm wondering in your follow-up studies if maybe you've done a sample size calculation to project what size sample that you would need to get statistical validity.
Yes, my biostats friend. We do have a biostatistician on the project who we consult with. He's one of our best good friends, actually. And since this is a pilot, he has given us these numbers as a start. So for the intervention, the number that we need for service providers across sites is 8, and the number of people living with HIV/AIDS that we need is 80. What he does with that behind the scenes, I would love to know, but these are the numbers that he's given us, given that this is a pilot study to look at all these analyses. But that is so not my area. I can give you his name and number for that information.
Okay.
But we consulted with him before we got
good.
These numbers were not arbitrary numbers.
Well,
these are ones he gave
to
us.
Good that you considered it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you all for your work. That was a tremendous amount of work that we did, so both the slides that we all saw. So thank you for that. I wanted to know, I'm actually at the FDA and the Oxford Minority Health, and it sounds like you all definitely have your ear to the ground. If you have to educate the public, or if you wanted the federal government to do a little bit more in terms of educating the public about minority participation in clinical trials, what would be some of your suggestions?
Broadly, innovation. You know, we've seen the posters, we've seen the flyers, just coming up with different ways to get at people's ears. For some of us who have heard these terms before and we know about clinical trials, there's a lot of information under that umbrella that is not available to us as researchers. You know, it's not much available in communities either. We've tried to be innovative with our approach. I think everyone around this just needs to come with something outside of a brochure. Do you have anything to add to that?
Maybe look at what cancer clinical trial researchers are using to get the information out about minority participation in those. That might help, because I think we had to even draw from that to create some of our program components.
And if you're doing this work in communities, you have to start with the community advisory board. Have to see where people are, to see what's already existing there, to see what their strengths are. But top down is great, but bottom up is even better sometimes. So if you're starting in communities, identifying those gatekeepers, those community leaders that we talked about in our data collection, who can tell you where to go, who to talk to, what to say, what not to say, or how to say, because you're going to have to say some things. So even starting with the local politician, one of our community outreach specialists is a politician, a peer educator, HIJK, element of P, he does everything. But he is our key person that we go to tell us, is this okay, is this not, what is our next step? And he's been so integral to this entire process, very integral.
Is your group going to be looking at how much referral the people that participated in your intervention actually do, and for the people with HIV, how many people actually enroll in the trial after the intervention?
So the survey Boone talked about is, and it's an outcome survey. So we conduct this at baseline, immediate, post, and 6 months. And we have dichotomous outcomes for service providers and people living with HIV/AIDS. Have you referred someone to a clinical trial in the last 6 months? Yes or no? That's one of our behavioral outcomes. For people living, it's intention to refer and then referral, because we're using theory of reason action. For people living with HIV/AIDS, it's did they follow up? So you end our session, then we give you an opportunity to talk with someone from the AIDS clinical trials unit. Did you take that step and make that initial interaction? Did you show up for your follow-up visit, and then did you enroll? Those are all dichotomous outcomes that we have.
Could you speak a little bit about, obviously that was one of your next steps, are those 6 month follow-up data, and then to expand, are you gonna stay in your state or beyond that, or is that to be determined?
We would love to be everywhere. So this is a pilot project that was funded by the National Institutes of Nursing Research for a four-year grant. We are applying for a renewal. Project East has planted a seed in this community, and people want to see it in other places. And that's dependent on funding. So this is, we're entering our fourth and final year. Project East at present will end June 2011. But we are looking at contiguous counties outside of the six that A. Boone showed on the first presentation, and making contacts in these counties as well. But yes, we've had people ask us to come out to Appalachia and all parts of the state. And we, of course, would like to take this nationwide. We think this is a very creative way to give this information to people who would probably never have access to it. So we would love to be nationwide, global, universal.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. And